Blog Talk Radio.
The A320 going to Phoenix, Arizona.
Thai 081 Heavy on Kilo, hold short Alpha.
Who's a Kilo Thai? Who is that?
Thai 081 Heavy.
Cam 8081 Heavy, left on Alpha, short to Echo.
Okay, left on Alpha, hold short at Thai 081 Heavy.
Hey, Ground Delta 929, we're on Bravo short of Victor, and we just had that little corporate jet pull in front of us, and then another 7-5, and thought we were supposed to follow JetBlue, sir.
You what? What happened?
Well, the corporate jet came off the runway, and we had to stop.
808 Bravo Lima, you didn't follow it. 808 Bravo Lima?
808 Bravo Lima, you told us to follow the Embraer, and that's what we did.
You followed the Embraer? JetBlue 1069? Somebody didn't do something right. JetBlue 1069.
Yeah, we were sitting there waiting for the Delta to move, and then Delta said he was waiting for the corporate. So we continued on, and then corporate followed us, and then Delta was going to follow corporate.
You can't just do. All right. See, this takes so much energy, guys. All right. Delta 929. Hang on a second, guys.
Okay. We're Bravo, short of Victor.
Yeah, right. Who's Bravo short of Victor?
Delta 929, sir.
You didn't even move yet then. What happened? We went out of sequence here. JetBlue 1069, you're behind a company
8320? And then we got to stop.
Hang on a second. JetBlue 1069, you're behind a company
8320? Yes, sir.
I don't know how that happened. Just follow him. And 8 Bravo Lima, you're behind a JetBlue. So everybody did right. Delta 929, just follow the Hawker.
Okay. Well, the Hawker's two planes in front of us.
Great. Delta 1869, you're behind the Hawker?
Correct.
JetBlue 1069, you got to just do what I ask, sir. Delta 929, follow the 7-5.
We can do that. 7-5, Delta 925.
Delta 1867, this probably screws you up, too. Where are you right now?
Yes, sir. We're number 2 on Bravo, short of Victor.
You're on Bravo. Delta 929, you were on Bravo, short of Victor.
That's affirmative, sir.
You know, I'm all screwed up. Jesus, JetBlue.
Clearing side, Omega 403. Follow 757 right on front and advise you unable to take taxiway Charlie Airbus 340-600.
You're unable to do everything, sir, that plane of yours, sir. Let me see. Yep, you can't go on Charlie. How nice. Go right on. Give way to the Delta jet off your right, sir. Okay, actually, it looks like he's clear. So, right on. Go right on Victor, right on 13 left, and hold short of Zulu Echo, Iberia, okay?
Okay, right, Victor, 13 left, hold short Zulu Echo, Iberia, 6252 heavy.
JetBlue 707, please don't follow Iberia. Just let him go left to right past you and then go down uniform and follow the line.
JetBlue 707, we'll go, sir.
Thank you. American 1639, you're on Bravo, short of Victor.
Affirmative.
Okay, JetBlue 8320 off your right is going to go. You follow him.
Follow JetBlue. American 1639.
Singapore 25 heavy, echo to Bravo, short of Victor.
Echo to Bravo, short of Victor.
Evergreen.
Roger, we're going 645 Eddie.
Yeah, and call me when you're at Victor. I got to weed you into that alleyway somehow. Hey, DHL, you're blocking whiskey, aren't you?
Well, the 152 Heavy is blocking Whiskey over here, and we're okay with the tower and roof clearance.
Yeah, I know. Evergreen, 645. Whiskey's currently blocked, but Charlie Echo's available. So just so you know, my plan of action is to bring you into Charlie Echo, okay?
Copy, Evergreen, 645 Heavy.
All right, let's just make sure. Hopefully that's where you're really going to be going.
0025 Heavy, Hotel short of Alpha.
JetBlue 707, I'm sorry, sir. Where'd you say you were?
And sir, we're holding short of Echo, sir.
Short of Echo on where?
At Alpha, sir.
JetBlue 707, you're on. Oh, you're the guy who came out of there. Okay, JetBlue 707, give way to your company off your right, then Echo to Bravo, short of Victor.
Echo, Bravo, short of Victor, and we'll get ready to company JetBlue 707.
JetBlue 176, if you can't get in, let me know.
Roger, we'll check.
Thank you very much.
Good evening, yes, from 208. The hotel short of Alpha.
Hotel short of Alpha was who?
Request for check.
Air Fran 011 Heavy, where are you?
10-1-0-10.
You coming out or you going in?
Coming out, Air Fran 011 Heavy.
The ground, good day.
Ground, we're clear, Canada. See the whole short at Victor on Bravo.
No, is that Air Fran 7 Heavy?
Air Fran 011 Heavy, ready to push.
Air Fran 011 Heavy. If you want to push in the alleyway, that's call your ramp for that.
Okay, call the ramp. 1-1 Heavy.
Ground United 8. Is there Canada going to get off of Whiskey or do you want us to go on Alpha?
Hey, those two JetBlues, can you guys get by Iberia or not yet? JetBlue 35, what's the problem?
Who do you want to follow?
You're on Bravo, you're short of Victor Alpha, you're beam the Iberian.
The beam Alitalia on the left there.
Beam Alitalia.
JetBlue 124.
All right, just hang on. JetBlue 179?
Yes, sir, we're number two holding short of Victor Alpha on Bravo.
Hey, who's the first JetBlue on Bravo short of Victor Alpha?
35.
You're an outbound?
Yep.
You guys should come up here one day. JetBlue 35, I need you to pull it right up there and hold short of Victor for me.
You must be about somebody behind us. We're right at Victor, 35.
Okay, you're at Victor. JetBlue 179, you're a beam the Alitalia?
JetBlue 144, Iberia, short of Victor Alpha.
All right, JetBlue 179, somebody stepped on you. You're the first one there, beam Iberia?
No, sir.
Folks, you just heard the day of an air traffic controller operating ground control, and it even gets better. But we just thought we would play that voice communications with the ground control at a very busy airport. I believe it is Kennedy Airport. And I just thought we'd open our program letting you hear what the pilots and the air traffic control go through every day, 24 hours a day, and during the periods of heavy inbounds and outbounds, you can imagine the stress and pressure that these air traffic controllers are under. So just wanted you to hear that, and the rhythm of these guys. They know exactly where they are, and sometimes the traffic controller gets confused and things like this happen. But he has a good demeanor. He doesn't explode under the pressure he's under. He just makes a good sport of it, and apparently nobody's going to get hurt. So I hope you enjoyed that. Jim Hart, our regular announcer, beginning of our show, is not with us tonight. He's en route from Martha's Vineyard, headed south on I-95, I suppose, and he checked in just a little while ago, said he was going to miss our show tonight, but he'll be with us next Monday. So I'm going to turn the duties over to Chuck Albright. Chuck, will you start our show for us tonight?
Sure will. Well, it's that time again, folks, and the radio voice of Eastern Airlines is on the air. Just as we have for the past 233 broadcasts, we thank you for listening in. This is the place you come to each week to talk and listen to the wonderful men and women known as the Eastern Family. We share their thoughts and memories of the best days of our lives. Our broadcasts are about Eastern's years as early as 1928 from Picard to Eastern, and even the new Eastern Air Lines Group. We hope you will be part of our show and participate. For those listening to the broadcast on their computers, all you need to do is call us at 213-816-1611, and we'll put you on Neil Producer's board, telling us what is on your mind and adding to the subject being discussed. Remember, unless Neil opens your phone connection to join the live conversation, you will need to press the number one button on your phone's keypad to join in. For those of you who can't listen in on a computer, you can still hear and participate by just calling the number you just heard. Also, keep in mind that your telephone and microphone pick up any noise that might be in the background, so be sure to mute your phone and keep as quiet as possible during the broadcast. Just as a reminder for those wanting to listen to our show live every Monday at 7 o'clock p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, you can connect by going to www.ealradioshow.com. Or you can also connect with the show at our sponsor's website, www.repaonline.com. That's www.repaonline.com. That's the site of the Retired Eastern Pilots Association. Let me repeat the phone number for the show again, 213-816-1611. Also, as a reminder, at the end of each of our show, we usually have time to remain for Eastern music, our music we grew up while we were working at Eastern. At each end of the broadcast, we will feature a different recording artist that we will recognize and play the recording selected by our producer. We hope you'll stick around after the sign-off music has been played for this part of the EAL radio show. Steve?
Neil, can we pull the chocks now?
Not only can we pull the chocks, but I suppose you want to start the two R2800 engines that's on this Convair 440 or Martin 404, which Eastern operated. I'll do that, and you'll hear a little bit about the Martin as it roars down the runway with those two powerful R2800s. So let's start the engine.
Clear.
Time in hell, you see, at the Vicksburg boarding gate, standing in that boiling spring.
till I could stand no more, waiting on that Southern Airways Martin 404. Listen to the rumble, the rattle, and the roar as she lumbers down the runway toward the Sears department store. For a flight that you'll remember, buy your ticket at the door, and climb aboard that Southern Airways Martin 404. Well, climb aboard that Southern Airways Martin 404.
This week we'll be asking questions that many wanted to know the answers, but we're afraid to ask. Shoot, we don't even know if the answers we hear tonight are correct. What do you think we are? Google? Wikipedia? If you would like to take part with a question, please feel free to jump in right in any discussion. Just give us a call at 213-816-1611. As part of Chuck's toolbox tonight, Steve, you're up to bat.
Yes, Chuck. I have always wanted to know about this D-check that we heard so much about throughout my whole career. And I've always wanted to know if Eastern did their own D-checks and what are the various maintenance checks on an aircraft carrier that an aircraft carrier goes through. And how long does it take to do a D-check and how expensive is it?
Well, you come to the right guy, because part of my career as a mechanic, I worked in Eastern's facilities down in Miami, and I did the D-checks. In fact, I've done all the checks that Eastern has had, A, B, C, D, and some of the overnight checks. As for the D-check, most D-checks take somewhere around 5 to 6 years to come about, and it approximately takes about 2 months to do one. That includes if you're going to include a paint job. But some, getting digressing a little bit, we have normal checks during the day that actually your flight engineers or your co-pilot would help do, and they're called daily checks, are kind of a periodic service check. You visually you look at the maintenance logbook, check to see if the entries, see if there's any maintenance done, and a PS check usually is performed either overnight or during downtime during a flight day. They're approximately 150 flight hours or 230 cycles. Now, a cycle on an aircraft in service is a takeoff and landing. And those are usually done on with one or two mechanics that go around and check the airplane out. Then we have a little more expensive check. It's called a B-check. And a B-check is performed approximately every 6 months. It'll need about 120 to 150 man-hours, depending on the aircraft, and usually can be completed in 1 to 3 days at a hangar in some airport where the major airlines have. It similarly occurs schedules to apply to B-checks as to A-check. So your A-check is incorporated into your B-check. However, B-checks also may be incorporated into what they call successive A-checks, which is A through A-10, and by the finish, when you finish A-10 check, you finished your B-check. Saves a lot of money, and a lot of the airlines do that today. Those are roughly 500 to 600 flight hours when they come due, and it's usually 100 man hours somewhere along in there to 150, and they involve most of the stuff that you would see it that doing the inside and outside of the airplane. A lot of times with the new aircraft, we put in new seats, we put in new lavatories in the back if they need to be replaced. So we have enough time to do those things with the amount of time that would they give you to finish the checks in 2 or 3 days. The bigger check is called a C-check. A C-check is the most thorough type of maintenance work performed by most airlines. The airframe, virtually the entire aircraft, goes through an extensive series of checks, inspections, and overhaul work. It is performed at either one of the heavy maintenance bases or an engineering center throughout the United States and overseas. There are usually levels of C-checks depending on the type of airplane. Like a narrow-body airplane, it's called a light C-check, which occurs approximately every 15 to 18 months and requires approximately 2,100 man-hours, approximately 3 days to accomplish. every fourth light sea check becomes a heavy sea check, and this requires 20,000 to 30,000 man hours and takes from 3 to 5 weeks to accomplish. Getting down to your basic question that you were talking about is the big, big one called a D-check. And a D-check, you have to bring your plane into a maintenance hangar in one of the facilities, and it's called a heavy maintenance visit, an HMV. This check occurs approximately every 6 years. It is a check that more or less takes the entire airplane apart for inspection, overhauls, and also, if required, paint may be completely removed for further inspection on the fuselage metal skin. And such a check is usually demanded up to 50,000 man hours and can be generated up to 2, maybe 3 months to complete, depending on the aircraft and the number of technicians involved. It also requires the most space of all maintenance checks, and as such, must be performed in a suitable maintenance base. Given the level of requirement for this check and the tremendous effort involved, it also is by far the most expensive maintenance check of all, with total cost for a single visit ending up well within the $3 to $7 million range. Most of the checks, when they come in for the D-check at Eastern Airlines, I was an L-1011 man most of my career. The first thing we do is jack the plane up and level it out with a leveling telescope like they do surveyors with sticks, and we put the jacks underneath the nose, landing gear, and tail. The next thing we do is we take the engines off, the light in the airframe, and we take the landing gear out. All the seats are coming out, all the laboratories come out, and underneath most of the plumbing and hydraulic bay inside an L-1011 is all completely washed down, cleaned, and all of the servicing of all the fluids and everything. Then we might take some of the skin off the airplane to get inside and check all the stuff that's inside the wings and some of the body fuselage panels that come off. All those panels come off. This all encompasses a lot of people. With 50,000 man hours, you can see that you're talking at least a couple of thousand people in the whole compass of one airplane. With the plane, the engine, the landing gears, when they go to the shops, they have to be tore apart. All the engines have to be tore apart and brought back together and brought up to snuff. Each airline has their own different specifications, but most of them are all regulated by the FAA, and they have to go by FAA regulations of how they're going to do this. Right now, the airlines perform approximately 11 man hours of maintenance for every 1 hour of flying time. So there it is in a nutshell. That's very condensed, by the way. I could really go into a lot of these different things that they do on the aircraft, but that's the answer to your question, Steve.
Thank you,
Back
Chuck.
To you.
Thank you.
Wow, Chuck, that was a very good explanation. We always heard about the C and D checks because of the time spent, the airplane spent out of service, and the number of man hours. That was news to me that you just mentioned. I didn't know that many hours and that number of people were involved in these checks. And routinely, the engines are going through their checks too, aren't they? And
yes, they are. I was a manager at the engine shop in Miami for the L-1011 RB-211 engine, and we completely tear down the engine, and we replace a lot of the major components, all the blades that you see inside and the things that they have different specifications that they have to meet. You can actually grind on a blade and take a nick out of it, but there's a certain amount that you can take out. For one blade on one side, you better make sure you take the same amount on the other side, or you're going to lose the dynamic balance of the whole fan section or turbine section. So, yes, you're right. They tear them all down. And those man hours that I quoted were part of the man hours that you would spend in an engine shop, a gear shop. All the electronics is taken out of the airplane, so there's all those electronic shops that are involved with overhauling the electronics of the airplane. And then you get into the portion of it and everything else. And then, of course, most of the planes that Eastern did, they redid the paint job. And I happened to do that one time because they were short help. And they asked people who knew how to paint to use the paint guns, and I volunteered for painting. An airplane gains about 800 to 1,000 pounds per paint job when they paint all of it, not just the ones that were silver, but the ones, the 1011s. And that's a lot of weight to compensate for when you come to fuel savings.
Yeah. Very good.
That's how you get your 50,000 hours about.
Yeah, and for every 1 hour of flight, 11 hours of maintenance is involved. Wow.
Yeah, it's quite extensive. And the planes today are more sophisticated, and believe it or not, they take less maintenance. Because a lot of the things that are done today weren't done back in the old days that Eastern Airlines flying, you know, their electronics was good, but it's not as good and digitized as it is today.
And don't forget, they're monitored continuously in flight as well.
That's true, including the engines.
Yeah.
That's why some of these engine things that we see, engine failures in flight, I don't understand why people don't realize what's happening and where they're at. Because they're constantly monitored.
Chuck, thank you very much for that report, and that answers the question there. I think you got a question for Jill, don't you?
Well, yes, I do. Okay, now, Jill, I have one for you. As an Eastern Airlines flight attendant, did you ever feel like working for another airline? If so, which one? And a side question would be, when did you first thought on becoming a flight attendant?
Those are two good questions. No, and you will appreciate my answer to the first part of this, is the fact that my dad was a tech rep for Allison Engines at General Motors. And as we all know, that before Eastern and Captainetti bought Eastern out, it was partially owned by General Motors. So he always had a very fond memory of Eastern Airlines. And so I was very much dedicated to Eastern Airlines. However, and I say this however, one of my first trips that I had on a C-3 pass, and I was flying from New York to Miami, I was offered a flight attendant position at American Airlines, and I turned it down. I had spent 6 months with Eastern, and I was on reserve the whole time, looking forward to the point that I'd be off of reserve, and I said, I'd never want to go through that again. And it was one of those things that just, you know, it was very flattering, but thanks, but no thanks. And then you asked me about my thoughts of becoming a flight attendant. My first time of ever being on an airplane was from Idlewild to Heathrow Airport in London, and my dad was stationed in England in conjunction with the Air Force, being a tech rep for General Motors, as he was. And I was absolutely fascinated. I was 9 years old, and 10 years later, I was hired by Eastern. And about this time, in 1968, I was in flight attendant school at the age of 19. And I was absolutely thrilled. It was the greatest experience I could have ever imagined. Now, Neil had mentioned about something about dreams, and after spending 20 years with the airlines and flying, I do have recurring dreams, and one of them is the fact that I will wake up. One of them is I will wake up in the middle of the night and try to remember where I'm at. And because we traveled so many different places that it's like you kind of wake up and say, okay, where am I? That's one of them. But the other one is trying to make sure I got that meal service done.
Yeah.
Many of our services in an hour and 15, 20 minutes had drinks and food service. And when I say food service, a complete meal within that short period of time. And nowadays, of course, we don't see that, but it was a big push. And I had been flying about 6 weeks, and they made me senior on a trip on a DC-9 from LaGuardia to Montreal. And we were delayed 15 minutes. My junior flight attendant had been flying 1 month, and our French-speaking flight attendant had been flying a year and a half, and she just threw up her hands with us because we didn't have the experience, and we ended up landing with trays underneath people's seats just to get them out of the way of, in case of turbulence or whatever, emergency, you know, get them on the floor. And ever since then, every once in a while, I've had this wild dream of not being able to get a service finished. And I'd like to hear some of the other stories other people have about their dreams as we go along. Now, I do have a question for Steve, because I had always heard of bolts of lightning rolling down the aisle from the cockpit. But, Steve, I always wanted to know about the brilliant display of electrical energy that sometimes light up the forward windows when the airplane is in clouds and at altitude. I've walked into cockpit at night, and sparks are shooting all different directions across the windshield. Doesn't that bother you guys while only being a couple feet away?
Well, Jill, it is fascinating for us to see that also. Even though we see it more often than certainly you would be able to, it is fascinating for us, and it occurs, and it has a name. It's called St. Elmo's Fire, and it's a visible luminous electrical discharge observed around parts of an airplane when the electrical charge on the airplane becomes sufficiently intense, similar in nature to the glow from a neon tube, and often observed as brush-like fiery jets extending from the tip of an antenna, a wing, propeller, a windshield, or other part of an airplane. And the St. Elmo's fire occurs when the atmosphere becomes charged and at electrical potential strong enough to cause a discharge plasma that's created between an object and the air around it. This can happen to an airplane flying through heavy charged skies. St. Elmo's fire is usually bluish or violet in color, but can also have a greenish tinge. Now, while not a hazard itself, St. Elmo's fire is an indication of thunderstorm activity and may be a precursor to a lightning strike. Apparently, St. Elmo's fire sometimes can be heard singing in the aircraft's radio, or frying or hissing sound running up and down the musical scale. And this also can be responsible for discharges down the aisles of the airplane. And it also is a kind of a warning that a lightning strike may be imminent. So that is called St. Elmo's fire.
That's really interesting. I've experienced several situations. Well, not technically, I don't think, struck by lightning, but have had episodes of well, the one in particular, and this was in 1969. We were flying. Oh, I'm not sure. It was a stretch DC-8 coming up from either Puerto Rico, but we were going into I want to say Montreal. So I'm trying to remember quite when that was, but we ended up hydroplaning across the runway and engine fire and whatnot. We didn't have to evacuate the airplane, but they had to bring buses out to collect the people. And I was it's interesting because it was a heavy rainstorm, a thunderstorm and whatnot. So that has always been a big question for me. Thank you for answering that question.
Yes, you're welcome, Jill.
You know, Steve, and this was bad. We shouldn't have done this, but every once in a while we get a brand-new flight attendant, and just so happened we were in weather, and the St. Elmos or the static discharge was just dancing all across the windshield, and you get the flight attendant and tell them a story about the stuff, and it won't hurt you. As a matter of fact, you grab her hand and kind of move it toward that window. And, boy, they pulled that hand back just as soon as you grabbed it and motioned toward that windshield. I mean, they knew it was going to shock them, but it doesn't. You can rub across the inside of that window all you want, and it's not going to do anything. And occasionally you could look out forward of the airplane. 727s, I used to see that. You could have a bolt of electrical discharge, just like kind of a probe sticking out in front of the radome. And like you say, in the old days, in the Connie days and DC-7 days, I suppose they had fireballs rolling down the aisles, as reported. So, interesting phenomena, though. Very interesting. Thank you for that. Cecile?
Hey, Neil?
Yeah. Don?
Yes, sir, I'm here.
Well, Don's got a question. Go ahead, Don.
I got a question for Chuck, I think. Certain system, we had a 727 flying around, and it was called an aft boost, full pump in op, which we had to hold load seats. What does that do? Why is that?
I'm sorry, I didn't get one. You were a little fuzzy. What was that again?
What does the aft fuel boost pump do in a 727? I mean, we had to hold load seats for that.
To carry more fuel, I would suppose, but there were restrictions on components that were out, and they were continuous items that were the airplane was able to go on to another destination or airport, and But sometimes it restricted the number of passengers because you had to haul extra fuel, I suppose.
Yeah, every night when I went to work, we had to hold load seats on that thing.
Yeah.
It lasted a long time.
Best I recall, you're right, it was the aft boost pumps. And to my recollection, there were, what, 4 boost pumps per fuel tank, Chuck, I believe.
Right.
Well, I'm thinking about the 727. I've already forgotten
about that. That's what it was, the 727.
Yeah.
You have to realize how the fuel flows out of the tanks,
yeah.
And that's why they have the separation of boost pumps.
Yeah. Okay, very good. Cecile, you have a question?
I worked in Engine Service Center for about a year, Steve, and I remember the mechanics saying they always had to cross-signed themselves to double-check, which means our planes were always so safe. How many mechanics have to sign off on what the work that they do?
Is that for Steve or for me?
Or whoever was taught, I'm sorry, whoever was giving us the info on the engine check, I'm sorry.
On the different checks, the ones that are overnight, It's just the mechanics that work on the airplanes. They have the A&P mechanic, the licensed mechanic, will come up to the cockpit, usually at the time of just before departure, and make sure the logbooks are all correct and all the corrective action is done according to FAA specifications. And he'll sign that with his license, and then the captain will usually sign the logbook off after him, saying that the maintenance has been completed, and that each one of them takes a sheet of paper. As the checks get more involved, then of course you have a lot of mechanics in the hangar that don't have the authority to sign off the actual logbooks that's in the hangar, only the worksheets. The worksheets they sign off, and a lot of times they'll put their license number down. But the whole check comes down to only a few people, and it's usually the managers involved, or sometimes if it's a big check, you'll have like a half a dozen managers that sign off for the different ones. Like, I was an engine manager, so I would sign off the engine portion of it if I was involved with the final assembly of the engine. And then, of course, you had the airframe guy, and he would sign that, the manager would sign off for that. But he would go through all these cards. There could be thousands and thousands of these work cards, and each one of them had to be inspected to make sure that the work that was signed off corresponded with the problem at hand, or the operation that should have been accomplished, like the putting in the seats, let's say. There's a card for putting in the seats. Somebody has to sign that card off. So the manager looks, or the foreman looks at it and says, okay, there's a signature. This guy saw all the seats in. They were put in. They were locked down correctly, because that was part of his job, to check all the locks in the seats, because you don't want the seats to come loose if you have an accident and the plane needs to brake really hard, because there's only actually six locks on each seat section. So he makes sure the locks are done, and he signs it off, and then the manager or the work manager or the foreman signs after him. As the check gets tremendous, then you get the engineering into it, and they sign a lot of things off. So there's a lot of looking after these checks as they get deeper and deeper into the checks. We discussed the D-check, and that's the most, most signed-off piece of paper you've ever seen.
Yeah.
Hey, it's Chuck, like a book.
Chuck.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Chuck.
Because of time, and Cecile, I know you have a question that was going to be directed to Jim Hart about sales and marketing and getting paid commissions. Unless you know how that's done, let's hold off, because Jim's not with us tonight.
Hey,
okay.
George.
You got it?
And,
sure.
And, yeah, and the air freight question, too. And now, since George is with us, I've got a question for George. And George, since you've been a union representative, I've often wondered what has to happen before a strike can occur with an airline. Just a brief outline, if you would, please, George.
Okay, well, usually what happens is, prior to the date of the expiration of the contract, it could be as far ahead as the parties agree, they exchange what's called openers, and the union and the management exchange with each other what they would like in a new contract. Then the negotiators sit down, the different negotiators, the negotiating committee for the union and the company negotiators, and they try to work out an agreement based upon what each side wants, okay? If that can't be done, either side, when they feel that they've reached that point, they can petition the National Mediation Board to assign a mediator to the negotiations, okay? Once that mediator comes on board, he's supposed to be neutral. He would look at both sides of the equation, so to speak, and then he would do a little friendly arm twisting, attempt to get each side to give and take a little bit, and hopefully resolve the dispute. And then the contract, of course, would go to the membership for ratification if that's what was in the pilot contract. if the parties can agree, and usually this is only after an extended period of time, well beyond the amendment date of the contract in question, the mediator would convene the three NMB members they're appointed by the president, and if they declared an impasse had been reached in negotiations, they would then enter what's called the 30-day cooling-off period, where normally the negotiations would extend around the clock. But if there's no agreement by the end of those 30 days, the company can impose its latest proposal on the group, and they're also at that time the group or whatever whoever they're negotiating, whatever union it happens to be, is free to strike. That's the way the Railway Labor Act outlines the procedure to take place.
George, we had, for the most part, the Airline Pilots Association was the union representing the airline pilots, the majority of the airline pilots for the majority of the airlines. And then I think American Airlines broke away from ALPA, started its own union. And do you know by any chance how many airlines have their own representation other than Airline Pilots Association?
Well, I know that the U.S. Airways pilots also did. They had USAPA. They broke away from ALPA. Now, of course, they're in the Allied Pilots Association with the rest of the American Airlines pilots. And the Southwest pilots, of course, have their own union. Those are the three largest ones that I'm aware of. There may very well be others, but I'm not aware of them.
Yeah. Very interesting. Very interesting. Okay. Thank you very much for that report, George. And I've got one more question, final question, that I'm going to ask Cecile. And I'm going to ask her to give us a report of how we are doing on the first annual Eastern Airlines Pioneers Reunion and Celebration. Can you fill us in and update us, Cecile?
Sure. Thanks, Neil. Folks, we're all on our way to making this first annual event one of the biggest ones, and you'll be so proud. Former employees and non-Eastern Airlines employees are joining us, as well as the new Eastern Airlines employees. So it's going to be a lot of fun. We're here to help the new Eastern Airlines grow. Some of the things that are going to be happening is Ed Weigel, president of Eastern Airlines, will be speaking on Saturday. There's going to be 2 days of fun dancing to our music on Friday night, and you get 2 free drink tickets. Saturday night, you get dinner, and it's a cash bar, and it's a cash bar after the 2 free drink tickets on Friday. We're going to be entertained by Pamela Martina, that sang with Julio Iglesias for 5 years. She did the duet Feelings. When you hear her sing the national anthem, you're going to get goosebumps. She's also going to treat us to other songs. We're going to have raffles, and Ed Weigel and the new Eastern Airlines has donated a free round trip, has donated as a prize for a raffle, round trip ticket to Havana, Cuba, and 2 nights accommodations. That's one of the top prizes. We also have other goodies that we're going to be raffling off. Plus, you're going to get money because we're going to be selling 50-50 raffle tickets. All our authors, Neil Holland is an author of Books of Many. George Jen is an author. Roland Moore will be there with Vito Borelli, who wrote and coordinated and put together the new book, The Wings of Man. So they'll be bringing books with them and be signing right there. As there'll be Eastern memorabilia being sold by various people. I don't know what the memorabilia is, but there's going to be plenty. If you need hotel accommodations, I still have 2 rooms left that I had set aside at $189. Today's price is $300 at the Renaissance Fort Lauderdale Hotel. But there's plenty of hotels nearby, and some of them might even be cheaper. Also, what did I forget? All for $100 for 2 days of fun. You can email me at Cecile, CECILE, easternair@gmail.com for the registration package, and we will take people even up to the last minute. All you got to do is email me. In the ERA newspaper, which comes out October 1st, there's going to be a big ad there. So we hope to get a lot more people. Remember, it's not just for Eastern Airlines employees. It's for everyone that just likes to dance, have fun, and hear some great speeches. Back to you, Neil.
And don't be surprised while you're at the reunion if you're asked to recall a story that you remembered back in your days with Eastern. We'd be happy to record it. I've done that at a couple of the retired Eastern Pilots Association conventions, and it really does make for good material for our radio show. And I've also entertained some good stories for a Volume 2, which we're working on now, of The Wings of Many. So if you feel like that you have a story that you want to get out there, then please catch me, and we'll record that story and see if we can get it on the air and also into the Volume 2 of the book. George Jen's book will be there on sale, George signing, autographed copies, and also some other related information about Flight 980. We'll be there where George will be. And also, like Cecile said, Vito and Roland Moore will be there with the new book that EARA has, which is Wings of Man. So, got a lot of things happening. And please send your $100 in. We'd like to have you at the reunion. Cecile?
Hey, Cecile.
One other thing before I forget, we might have a great a family member of the Rickenbacker. We're trying to see if their schedule allows it, and it'll be great to have them there. We're hoping that their schedule will allow them to come. And the other thing I wanted to share with you, if you didn't get my email, just go to the EAL Radio Show website and send Neil a message, and he'll forward me your name and phone number or email, and I'll be glad to send you the package. Go ahead, George.
Yeah, I just have one question, Cecile. About how many people have signed up so far, and how many do you anticipate having there?
We hope to have a lot of people, and we're not disclosing the number because it's going to be a surprise, George. We have capacity for a lot of people. And hopefully we get about 4 or 5 applications every day, and we will give you the number when you get there. You'll see there'll be plenty of people, plenty of dancing. So I saw your email, by the way. Thank you for sending it out.
Yeah, well, no, that we got to thank Jim Holder for that, because I mailed it out.
That was very thoughtful. Yeah, but
yeah, I mailed it out to the people I had on my email list. One of whom was Jim, and he was kind enough to forward it to all the Reaper members.
I wish I'd have thought of that. Thank you for thinking about that, George.
And no problem.
I don't have him as a name, but I do want to thank Beverly LaPointe. She has done a tremendous job with the Silver Liners, and the Silver Liners have really come across. We're going to have a lot of Silver Liners. They are so awesome, and I want to thank Beverly for her help also. She's been great. And with everything at Penny Ripple,
and Don and Dorothy Gagnon. Don's with us tonight.
Oh yes,
and you heard him a while earlier, and the two of them helped out tremendously. But
Dorothy,
answer your question, George, we'll have well over 100 people. You know, initially we thought 250 people. That was really thinking big, and but we will have a good crowd, and we're very confident it'll be well over 100 people. So,
okay.
Well, I've got bets going with Neil. I think it's going to be over 100.
Yeah, I don't want to lose my bet. So, I hope. But it's going to be a great time. And
Neil, did you go down there and speak with the manager? You had mentioned to me that you were going to.
Yeah, we had a meeting. There was Cecile, myself, Dorothy, and Don, and Joe. who is a DJ, was there. And is that, I think that was the group, Cecile?
Yes, that was it.
Yeah,
and
we met
Emery.
With
the Emery was there.
Yeah, Emery, and we met with the staff, and they showed us the facilities, and it really is going to be nice. It's, and we have a big banner that we're putting up across the speakers table, and we'll be having speakers from the floor as well as from the speakers table, which will be kind of a little bit elevated there, and then we'll have a microphone there on the floor for those that want to tell. We won't have too much time, but we want to hear from those people also that want to give testimony to the greatest airline that ever was. So we're going to have a good time.
We're hoping to have a lot from the Miami present employees. They've been really busy working on the airlines, so we have a couple of people there that are working with us to get present Eastern Airlines employees there also. So we don't have that count yet, but hopefully we'll have some from Miami.
Well, about now, I remember Jill talking about her dreams, and I just finished dinner one night, and I was getting a little sleepy, so I decided to check the clock to see if it's too early to turn in. And looking at the digital clock on the bookshelf, it said 7:07. Still a little too early, so I decided to read some of the book I've been trying to finish for the last several weeks, but my eyes got a little heavy and needed to close. And so I checked the clock once again to see if I could read a little bit more, and I saw that it was now 7:20. I'm turning in regardless of the hour, I told myself, and pajamas on and lights out. When I look at the digital clock with its red glaring numbers, 7:27. A few minutes later, my wife comes in to ask why I'm not going to watch Bill O'Reilly with her. Finally feeling totally sleepy, I take one last glance at the digital clock, and the numbers appear 7:47. In what seemed like an instant, my eyes opened to daylight, and I checked the clock once again, and it's 7:57 a.m. I then realized the significance of time. The clock is giving me all the Boeing jet aircraft flown by Eastern Airlines, with the exception of the 707. Have you ever looked at the clock for Eastern aircraft? You won't find a 767. A 777 or 787, because there's only 3 minutes left on the clock. That's my story.
By the way, Neil, you know, we ought to ask Bill O'Reilly if he'd like to come down to our reunion. You know, he lives right here by where I do.
Oh, he does? Okay.
That would be great, yeah. Yeah.
Well,
I'm sure he remembers Eastern Airlines.
Oh yeah, some of the pilots or somebody's probably flown him on Eastern. We had a lot of news commentators. I flew Walter Cronkite on a flight from New York to Fort Lauderdale, and he had his sailboat parked there at Pier 66, and we had him on that flight. And he came up to the cockpit, very nice gentleman. And so I had Walter Lippmann on it one time, one flight, years and years ago, back in the 60s. So it would be interesting.
Maybe we could get Arthur Godfrey also.
That might be
a DC-3, he can fly again if he's willing.
Yeah. I had Jules Bergman on the flight. He was the science editor for ABC News. So
okay.
We're covering the area.
Yeah, I had Dan Rather several times on the shuttle.
Wow. You know, that might be a good show. Talk about the celebrities and the politicians that were on our flights, because a lot of course, travel the air shuttle. Washington,
yeah.
New York. And yeah.
Well, they travel all over.
Yeah. Don?
Well, for us mechanics, I had a nice talk with Johnny Ray. For lunch.
Okay. Yeah, Mr. Eastern. Yeah. Johnny Ray.
Yeah, I had lunch with him in the employees' cafeteria.
Okay, very good. Well,
Neil,
I
had
clock.
That.
Jim Graybill, go ahead.
No, that's hard to go. I'll talk to you later.
Well, we are getting close to the end of the hour, and I hear the music coming up, so.
Well, golly gee, what a great show tonight, folks. Mr. Producer, I think we're ready for the national syndication. Where does the time go when you're having fun? You know, it's always fun when we talk about Eastern Airlines, and we feel that we're truly earned the title of Radio Voice of Eastern Airlines. And it's all because of your callers and listeners and guests and hosts. We hope you'll be listening in again next week when our episode Flight 234 departs the gate on time at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. Until then, we all say good night, Eastern family.
Good night, Eastern family.
Good night, Neil.
Good night, Don.
Neil.
Good night.
I'm quick and courageous, I'm wonderfully bright. My job is remembering what the captain forgets, and I never talk back, so I have no regrets. I'm a lousy co-pilot and a long way from home. I make out the flight plan and study the weather. Pull up the gear, drop it, and stand by to feather. I make out his mail forms, I hire his horse, and I fly his old crate to the tune of his snores. I'm a lousy co-pilot and a long way from home. I make out the flight plan according to Hoyle. I take all the readings, I check on the oil. I hustle him out for the midnight alarm. I fly through the fog while he sleeps on my arm. I'm a lousy co-pilot and a long way from home. I treat him to coffee, I keep him in cokes. I laugh at his corn and his horrible jokes. And once in a while, when his landings are rusty, I come through with, "Yes, sirree, Captain, it's gusty." I'm a lousy co-pilot and a long way from home. All in all, I'm commissioned a general stooge. I sit on the right of this high-flying Scrooge. Someday I'll make captain, and then I'll be blessed. I'll give my poor tongue one long hell of a rest. I'm a lousy co-pilot and a long way from home.